Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. That's the voice of countertenor Anthony Roth Costanzo singing The Encounter by composer Philip Glass. Costanzo has been hailed by NPR as a countertenor for the 21st century, and he's made it his mission to make opera mainstream again. That's no easy task for a genre that has struggled to connect with contemporary audiences. But Costanzo believes that through collaborations with musicians, artists, filmmakers, and fashionistas, opera can reach anyone. He is Musical America's 2019 Vocalist of the Year, and he has a new album out, his first, entitled ARC. It melds the old-world compositions of George Frideric Handel with the more modern works of Philip Glass. Costanzo was in Boston this week with the Celebrity Series of Boston, and he joined me in the studio. Anthony, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So, as a countertenor, and perhaps you can explain a little bit what that is, although I think our listeners got a clue hearing your musical introduction, you must have a somewhat limited selection of roles, right? Because you're singing in a register that we're more accustomed to hearing from female vocalists.
Totally, and you might be surprised hearing my speaking voice now after hearing that clip. It's a totally different register from the speaking voice, but we all have it. You know, men have falsetto voices, and essentially I'm just singing in a reinforced, trained falsetto, and it goes back to the Baroque times. When women weren't allowed to sing in church, opera's happening. And so what winds up going on, which is very strange, is men are castrated to keep their high voices so that they can sing really loud. Now, of course, this makes every man in any audience I talk to very uncomfortable when we discuss it. But it was an amazing phenomenon that launched opera into the public and made it super popular. And I think the fascination with that high adult male sound carries forward to like Michael Jackson, the Bee Gees, Prince, all of the people who sing high. And essentially, I'm doing that in the operatic form.
And you've skipped the surgical assistants, but my understanding is that there was actually some advantage that went with that. I've heard you talk about the more easily expanded rib cages of the castrati, right, that you don't have. Tell me about that sort of extra endurance challenge.
Absolutely. You know, they were different because their hormones were not the same as ours as adult males. So their bones didn't harden as much, and that meant they could expand their rib cages, and that's where your breath goes when you're breathing as a singer. So they could sing forever and ever and ever. This is the lore that we hear. So composers like Handel write these long, long lines, and that's a primary source. When we look at the music of Handel, we see these long lines that now I have to deal with as a non-castrated male.
So you have these old selections by Handel that you can sing, but there's a more limited selection of contemporary music written for the countertenor. And so my understanding is you've had to sort of forge your own path and be kind of an entrepreneur in the musical space. Fill us in.
Absolutely. I think as a soprano or a mezzo-soprano, tenor, bass, you can sing all the Puccini, Verdi, Tosca, La Bohème, all the things that, you know, are classic opera tunes. But as a countertenor, you really are relegated to this Baroque period or contemporary things like Philip Glass that have been written for countertenors. Or I poke composers with, you know, hot pokers and say, write me something. And so I've developed a whole repertoire of contemporary work, and I've found parallels between Handel and Glass, which is really interesting to me. They both use repetition to sort of plumb the depths of human psychology. And when I think about what I do as a human being, if I've got a crush on someone and they text me, I look at that text 10 times. That is our psychology. And so someone like Philip Glass takes that idea of repetition, and he repeats little chunks of the music over and over, and it enters your psyche and it becomes almost sort of meditative.
So part of your mission now is to deliver opera to the masses, to expand the appeal. How do you go about doing that?
I think it's all about interdisciplinary collaboration. I feel like our audiences are there. They just don't know that they would like opera, but they're people who like beautiful things, whether it's fashion, dance, art. I think that's where our gateway audience lies. So I try and give them a point of access by collaborating with all different artists across different disciplines and getting them to use opera in their work in some way or another so that the audience of a famous filmmaker might say, hey, I really like that music that was in that video of yours that I saw. What is it? And I think people are so intimidated by the language. It's in a different language. It's boring. It's a long format. And I think it's actually not as difficult as people think to relate to. They just need a way to get into it.
On the program last week, we heard some of a collaboration that you're sort of talking about between Freddie Mercury and an opera singer, Montserrat Caballé. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you even expanding beyond the vocal medium?
Absolutely. I love those kinds of collaborations. And I think that was an exposure for her, a very famous opera singer, to a whole new audience. And they must have thought, who is this woman? I want to go look at more clips of her on YouTube, if that had existed back then. But that's the way it happens. And then you start to get engaged by the music itself. And I don't think the opera is for everyone. I don't think everyone will buy 20 tickets a year. But I do think it holds a sort of perspective on the human condition, which is really meaningful, really emotional, and can also be really fun.
So a prime example of exposing a new audience to opera is a video that you produced back in 2014 called Opera in the Bronx. And if you haven't seen it, it's a video in which you show up in a classroom of sixth graders, and how you approach the classroom really gets to the fundamentals of the craft. Let's take a listen.
When you feel sad, what do you do? Give me a sense of what that sounds like. Let me take that feeling and let me put that in the music. I want you to listen and see if this music can put you in touch with how that feels.
So what you see there is a little bit of initial snickering by some of the children, and then they get pretty serious, Anthony, and they're kind of into it. And as you see that reaction from the audience, what's going through your head?
A lot of things, but I see these kids as the litmus test for everyone else. I mean, if they get it and they get it so profoundly, yes, they laugh, they cover their ears, which I love because I'm a man singing with a woman's voice. It's weird, you know, and I love that novelty factor. So I invite them to laugh. But as they listen, and they listen more intently because they're sort of shocked by it, they get so engaged in it. And every single class I've done this for, there are always kids who cry, kids who are connecting to the emotion of their daily lives, the loss of a parent or the loss of a turtle, whatever it is. They have this inherent emotion, and this music brings it out in them, even when they don't know what the words mean, what the historical context is. So I see the primal power of the human voice, and I see it have an effect on these kids, and I think this can work for anyone.
You've said elsewhere that even with the gender fluidity of today, the shock value of seeing this man stand up and sing in a woman's voice hasn't worn off. It didn't wear off for those kids. But I'm curious whether you feel like this moment of gender fluidity, as you put it, actually does sort of expose a new audience or new opportunity for you.
It's amazing to me, that the younger kids that I meet now are so much less sensitive to this binary construction of what gender is. And though my voice is shocking just coming out of my body, it's a small body and it's a big voice, it's able to be accepted more readily and in a more welcoming way in these times than it was when I was younger.
So the new album, ARC, combines music, as you mentioned, from George Frideric Handel and Philip Glass. And this is obviously a very old classical composer and a more contemporary one. And I want to play one of the pieces from ARC. This is a Philip Glass selection. The song is called Liquid Days, which he originally composed in 1986. And the lyrics for this piece were written by David Byrne of the new wave band, The Talking Heads. Let's take a listen to this one. So the accompanying video here really adds another layer to it as well. It shows a contemporary dancer alone under an overpass. And I think it really represents the epitome of what you're trying to do, if I understand your mission. And I'm curious if you can just tell us a little bit more about what that song means to you.
Absolutely. Well, it's a very funny song, in addition to being touching, making love a character and talking about how love needs a shave and love takes off its shoes and sits on the couch and crosses its legs. So it's abstract and also very narrative at the same time. And what we decided to do is make these music videos in classical classical music, I'd never seen something that felt like a pop music video. They all felt a little bit kind of staid to me, be in front of a velvet curtain or with a glammed up opera singer. So I said to these filmmakers and artists, Oscar winners. This one was made by Mark Romanek, who's directed Beyoncé and Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson and Madonna, anyone you ask. And we said to these people, make whatever occurs to you from this music. And what they've done with it in all these different cases, we're releasing 9 of these videos, and you can watch them, really illuminates the music from a different visual perspective, and it tells a story. Even Tilda Swinton, the famous actress, made a video of one of the Handel arias with all of her dogs on the beach, and it's gotten a lot of play because it's so joyous to see the dogs jumping and running and almost doing choreography to this opera. So there are fun, serious, and touching ways that all of these songs have been interpreted and reinterpreted.
Yeah, the dog video is mesmerizing. And it's exactly what people need when they need a little lift me up. But I'm curious what the response is within your classical community. I mean, do you get complaints and pushback from people saying, you know, we realize you want to appeal to new people, Anthony, but, you know, the art form is the art form and, you know, you're straying too far?
I've gotten surprisingly little pushback, although I'm sure it's there and I don't hear enough of it. But I think it's great if I can create controversy and push people's buttons and push the envelope. I think fundamentally what we're all excited about is keeping the tradition at its core alive. It's not that I'm changing the way I sing. It's not that I'm changing anything Handel or Philip Glass wrote. I'm just giving it a new lens through which to be seen. And so in that sense, it's not so transgressive, but hopefully just creative.
I should mention that the dog video that we're talking about is available for your viewing pleasure on our website at radioboston.org. And as you mentioned, it was directed by Tilda Swinton and her partner, Sandro Kopp. And it really is just a joy to watch. But in the absence of being able to watch it live right now, let's just take a little listen. So as you're listening, just picture the Springer Spaniels frolicking in the water and jumping around on the beach. So as you look ahead, what does the future of opera look like in your mind? Or perhaps compare that to where you think it's going on its own track and where you might have to redirect it a little bit.
That's a great question. I feel like opera has to reinvent itself a little bit, but that doesn't mean erasing what it is, because there's so much to love about it. The reinventions of opera need to happen in new spaces with new collaborators so that the art form itself takes on a different patina and it enters the zeitgeist. And I think once people are exposed to those more novel interpretations of the music around the fringe, then it takes them back to the core and the traditional things, which our cultivated taste, that's for sure. But once you have an in and a way to love it, it's much easier to approach.
That is Anthony Roth Costanzo, a countertenor, and his new album is called ARC. And for more information and to view some of those joyous videos that we were just talking about, you can visit our website, radioboston.org. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Callum Borchers. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.